Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankover. Civil Defense Radio is more than just a podcast about a new American civil defense structure. Through our total media presence, our website, Facebook, and Twitter pages, we work to inform you of the many serious threats, both natural and man-made, that our nation faces. Those issues many news outlets are afraid to speak about or unwilling to mention. We believe this total information approach will assist you in making the best possible decisions about the safety and security for yourself, your family, your neighborhood, and community during disastrous events. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and we want to be part of your preparation. We strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. We offer guidance on our website at civildefenseradio.com under the Resources tab. Just look for the guide at the top of the page. It is enough information to get the discussion started. As always, we are here to help. We ask you regularly download and listen to our shows and visit our web and social media platforms often at civildefenseradio.com, on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, and on Twitter at civil_DEF_radio. Now, let's get on with our show. This week we have Matthew West returning to our show, and welcome back, Matt. How you doing?
Doing great, Preston. I really appreciate you hosting me again. I enjoyed our last show conversation, and I look forward to see what we can discuss today.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I think this is going to be really interesting. So for those of you who don't remember Matt from a previous show, Matthew West is a risk manager with the Texas State Office of Risk Management and is a reserve deputy sheriff with the Medina County Sheriff's Office. He has over 19 years of law enforcement experience and worked as a state police officer and a special agent with the Union Pacific Railroad Police. He has worked as a first responder in several large-scale disasters such as hurricanes, tornadoes, and floods. And you can always find him on LinkedIn. Matt, that's just a little precursor to who you are, and I guess we need to tell them what we're going to talk about today. So you wrote a thesis, was your master's thesis back in 2013 that after I read it, I said, I got to get you on and talk about this because there was so much great information in there. Matter of fact, there were some details that you came up with that I hadn't found in other things that I'd read about those same events. So let's start with your thesis. And how did you decide to focus on this subject? And can you give us the title of that?
Well, Preston, the title of my thesis, it's a rather long one. It's Evaluating the National Preparedness of the United States Against an Electromagnetic Pulse Threat. And I came across the subject just kind of by accident. You know, my master's is in Homeland Security, so during this time I was with the Railroad Police, and, you know, things were unfolding as far as national events going, you know, new presidencies that were underway. You know, a lot of the police brutality, saw a lot of civil unrest, and I was just like, okay, you know, this is something I want to start researching, especially when it comes to the civil defense part of it. And as I started going through some of the research material, I came across a couple of papers that talked about EMP. And I said, well, wait a minute. This is something that's interesting. You know, I knew a little bit about it. I studied a little bit about the Carrington event, which was the huge solar storm we had back in the late 1800s, 1859, actually. And I thought, you know, if we had another event like this, how would it affect us? So I started researching that, and then I started coming across a lot of the research that was done during the nuclear testing, during the atomic age, during and right after World War II, during the Cold War, and started learning some more about the effects of man-made EMPs. And I thought, wow, you know, this is stuff that's out there. It's public information, but it's really buried. You know, you have to do a lot of digging.
You're right.
And really, had it not been for the online libraries that I had access to, I probably wouldn't have even found some of this doing Google searches. And again, this is back in 2012 and 2013 when I was working on this paper. And it really grabbed my attention. I said, you know what? If this was happening, number one, it would be such a detrimental impact to the United States. It would be something that we probably would not be able to recover from, at least not in the short term. It would be a long-range devastating effect.
Yes, I agree. You know, I talk about this often, and I get a lot of people that ask me, why? Why do you focus on EMP and the power grid threats? You know, what are you, a conspiracy theorist or what? You know, but it's an easy question for me to answer. I focus on it for two main reasons. We are extremely vulnerable through our power grid, and two, it's the most serious threat that we can face is an EMP of either an EMP or solar flare taking out our grid, because everything relies on electricity. You can't even have sanitation without electricity, because the pumps and everything, they have to work with electricity. And if the power goes out, you're stuck. We're back to Little House on the Prairie.
Yes, you're right. And I was watching a show, and unfortunately I can't remember the name or the title of it, and I was just kind of breezing through, and they were talking about the devastation of the waterways affecting Iraq and the Middle East right after the Gulf War, and how that area is being controlled. And during the Gulf War, when we did all the bombings and we went in and actually went in and took control of Iraq, you know, there was a lot of critical infrastructure that was destroyed. A lot of it were wastewater and freshwater treatment plants, and the power was cut off to them because of the bombing and both also sabotage from ISIS. You know, it shut these things down, and it caused, you know, hundreds of thousands of people to become sick. This would be exactly what would happen if we had an EMP hit our grid system, whether it's regional or nationwide, or in the case of a major space weather event, it could be worldwide.
Yes.
And we would lose all that. We would lose everything.
Yes.
And, you know, you talk to a lot of people, they, oh, well, you know, we survived back in the 1800s. You know, we just have to learn to do it again. The problem is we don't have the mechanical devices we had in the 1800s. We have become so dependent on technology with the Internet of Things. Everything is so intertwined. You know, when's the last time you saw somebody that had a hand drill?
Exactly.
And I'm not talking about a powered hand drill. I'm talking about the good old crank one.
You know, something even simpler. When was the last time you saw anybody with any real skill just changing a tire on their vehicle? I mean, that's like a major crisis. They got to call somebody to come do it. The knowledge that has been lost through the technological age is amazing. People cannot live at Little House on the Prairie. You know, people say, well, if something happens, I'm going to the mountains. Well, you and 50 million other people, and guess what? You're all going to die up there because none of you know how to live in that type of environment, right?
You're right. I just had that conversation the other day with somebody. We were talking about bugging out. And I, oh, well, I'm going to bug out of the city. Well, again, how are you going to get out of the city? Because once everything comes to a grinding halt, you know, I work in Austin. I try to be out of my office by 4 p.m., and even then I'm hitting traffic.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes me an hour and a half to make what should be a 25-minute commute. So imagine all that just coming to a dead stop. There is no way you're going to make it out of town anytime soon.
Oh, yeah. Austin is crazy busy. I used to live in South Texas for many, many years. I know Austin. I hate it going through Austin.
I tell everybody, I don't live in Austin. I just work there.
Yeah. Well, Austin's a nice town. I really like that place. Central Texas is beautiful. I read through your thesis, and I highlighted a whole bunch of things. I want to talk to you about the various things that you have in your thesis that you cover. And, you know, the reason I wanted to talk to you on the show was because you are an expert. The volumes of research you had to go through to write these 60, 263 pages, you know, that you condense down into 62 or 63 pages. It was a library of information. And so by doing that, you are, and in my opinion, a subject matter expert. I know you don't like that term, but you are a subject matter expert in these subjects because of the wealth of information that you had to sift through in order to dissect it and relay it to, you know, on paper and make it coherent, which you did a very, very good job of. This is a well-written paper, and the information is outstanding. It's it flows in a very easy way to understand it. So let's look at your first topic, EMP, which I personally see EMP as the number one boogeyman because it does the most damage over the shortest period of time, and it causes everything else to go helter-skelter.
Well, and not only that, Preston, you know as well as I do that it's instantaneous. It's literally something that will take you by surprise. It may take a day or two before we even realize what happens.
Well, some people, I think you and I will know. we'll be already organizing our neighborhoods.
One of the things that really caught my attention when I was doing the research was when I started reading about the high altitude electromagnetic pulse. It actually became kind of fascinating to me because you see Hollywood movies where they have EMPs, Battleship, Battle of Los Angeles, Transformers, The Matrix. You know, they all talk about EMPs, and it's kind of in our mainstream vocabulary now thanks to Hollywood and social media, and it's even had some awareness on some of the major news networks as well. But, you know, I don't think people realize just how much of an impact a simple EMP device can have. Even if it's on a localized, if you have somebody that wanted to have malintentions and were able to develop, which the technology is out there, we know that it's out there, to develop a EMP weapon that's even directed energy, you know, you can take out small electrical transformer stations, high voltage transformers, other targeted infrastructure that requires electricity to run. Until I started really researching it, I was like, well, you know, let's, like you said, it's the tinfoil hat. Everyone's going to think I'm crazy when I start talking about this. But the more I started looking at it, it's like, wow, this stuff is real. The technology is out there, and now more than ever, it has become so advanced that it really is a threat. And, you know, Preston, you were law enforcement, I was law enforcement, and we both know that, you know, if you're thinking like a criminal, you know, if you thought about something, that adversary has probably already thought about it and planned it.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the way I looked at it, is, you know, this information is what we have that's public. You know, what has China taken from us? What has Russia taken from us?
That is another aspect that that a lot of people don't realize is the adversaries that we have, which we have a plethora. Used to be we only had to worry about the Russians. Since we've been able to turn over all this information to the Chinese, they're almost peer-to-peer with us in their capabilities. Matter of fact, in cyber, they are probably a peer, even peer with us. We have the Russians, we have the Chinese, we have the North Koreans, we have the Iranians, and then we have the terrorist groups, which the Iranians mostly sponsor. So we've got a lot of threats out there, just that, you know, they're far away. So a lot of people think, oh, you know, I'm driving to work every day, driving home, you know, everything's hunky-dory, I can listen to music and not have to worry about anything. You know, kids going to soccer practice and all this stuff, you know, we can put our head in the sand and be safe, so to speak. But in reality, there are people out there that are lurking around looking to take us out. And it's like the old West, you know, we're Matt Dillon and we got people that are just waiting to challenge us to a duel, you know?
Yeah.
Something that you didn't put in your thesis, which may not have been available at the time, was North Korean satellites. That there's two of them that rotate over, you know, they go around the globe and they cross over the United States twice a day. And as far as open source material goes, there's nothing to say that they are nuclear capable. But the master of EMP knowledge, Peter Vincent Pry, is sounding the alarm on those quite often. So that tells me that if he's worried about it, there may be something more to it.
Absolutely. And again, this knowledge is nothing new. I mean, in my paper, I wrote that one of the things that Russia did was back in 1961 and 62, they performed a series of what they called K tests, K as in kilo. And they were EMPs, nuclear weapons that were detonated over the airspace of Kazakhstan. And they did this purposely over a highly populated area. There's a lot of industry. You know, Russia obviously did not have a problem testing on their own people. And what they found was that this larger high-altitude EMP, or HIMP, as we refer to it, you know, caused damage to diesel generators. It disrupted telephone and microwave communications and other radio communications, and even started a fire in one of the electrical generator stations. You know, let's fast forward to some of the solar events we had back in 1998 in Quebec. You know, we've discovered that it took out transformers, it took out generators, and took out a high-voltage transformer out of all places, a nuclear power plant. So this is stuff that Russia has been working on since the 60s. And I think we would be naive to think that they just mothballed it and then think of it as something that could cripple us. We all know that we are so dependent on electricity that that is our Achilles heel. I don't care what you say. You cut us there, you're going to bring us to the ground.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. There's no doubt about that. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the sun. Hello, friends. Please allow me to speak with you about something you may want to add to your regular health maintenance routine, as well as your preparedness supplies. A few years ago, I came across an article in a preparedness magazine that caught my attention. My wife and I have always been health conscious, and we have taken various supplements over the years. However, this article introduced us to the world of essential oils. My wife began researching to find a reputable company with a high-quality product. What she found was a company that we have been with now for about 4 years, using their products, many of them daily. The company is doTERRA, and their products are certified pure, therapeutic-grade essential oils. Essential oils come in all grades on the scale, but doTERRA oils are, in our opinion, at the top. Since you can go to Walmart and your local pharmacy and purchase essential oils, but not many of them are recommended for internal use. Many of our oils can be used orally, topically, and diffused for their wonderful aromatic fragrance and health benefits. Some of our favorites we use almost daily are lemon, clove, frankincense, lavender, On Guard blend, peppermint, and melaleuca, also known as tea tree oil. These oils have become our go-to remedies for managing our health throughout the year. In fact, we credit our oils for our overall good health. You can too. Just visit our website at oilsforlifetoday.com. That's oils, the number 4, lifetoday.com. And explore the wonderful world of certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils for yourself. We're back with Matthew West talking about his thesis on Civil Defense Radio. So, Matthew, can you tell us about the sun and a little bit more in depth about how the sun is actually an enemy?
That's an understatement on there. And in reality, just from my own personal perspective, I am more worried about a solar event happening than a man-made EMP. Not that one is, you know, worse than the other, because it's going to have the same effects. So the thing with the sun, though, is going to be the scope and just how much of society is going to be affected. Again, we're not talking about a regional. We're not talking about even a nation. We're talking about half the world, if not all the world, depending on the size of it. And we talk about space weather. A lot of people talk about solar flares. You hear that all the time. Well, we hit a solar flare. You know, the solar flare causes the Aurora Borealis to become brighter and more beautiful. And it's something that we kind of just, it's a solar flare, no big deal. You know, ham radio, we talk about the geomagnetic storms and how it affects communications and propagation and radio waves. But what I'm talking about here, when we talk about a non-nuclear or a space weather EMP, we're talking about a coronal mass ejection. This is a huge, huge body of electromagnetic energy and gamma rays that is being literally exploded from the sun, and then whatever is in its path is going to be affected. If it was to hit Earth, and this is what scientists believe happened in 1859 with the Carrington event, is that this huge coronal mass ejection hit the Earth, energized it, and created havoc on the telegraph lines, caused, as I talked about in the last show, you know, the miners in the Midwest, you know, in the United States, this was still the wee hours of the morning, it was still dark, you know, like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and these miners get up and start getting their gear because the Aurora Borealis is so bright that they think it's time to go to work. Now, again, we're talking about 1859, and yeah, it disrupted the telegraph. It disrupted, you know, the sky as far as the aurora goes. But when scientists started looking at it and the voltage that the stuff was creating, it, if this was to happen today, it would take out a majority of the grid, not only across the nation, but probably a large portion of the northern hemisphere, if not the entire world. You know, the explosive energy released by a solar flare is about the equivalent of millions of 100 megaton hydrogen bombs being detonated. Not just 100 megaton hydrogen bomb, but millions of them. That is the explosive energy released by just one of these coronal mass ejections.
Hmm. Well, I know that in 2014, the media started talking about an event that happened in 2012, go figure. Dr. Pry says that we missed getting hit by that solar event by 3 days. Some people say 9 days, but, you know, who cares? We missed it by a feather width, so it was almost there. And Saturday, there was a solar flare erupted, and it should be hitting tomorrow and the next day. So here we are, you know, almost midweek, and we're getting the results from this solar flare. So that happens very quickly. You know, we may have as few as 9 hours, or we may have 2 or 3, 4 days before it hits, depending on the speed, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're right. Depending on the speed, it can be, you know, from hours to days. And the fact, Dr. Sten Oldenwald, he's a NASA astronomer. He had a website up when I was doing this research, and he lists some of the more notable solar events that have been recorded since 1859. And he said from August 28, 1862 until October 29th of 2003, they recorded 98 major solar weather events. You know, most of these were reported to be unusually bright displays of the Aurora Borealis, you know, extending farther south than it should. You and I kind of ran around the same parts of South Texas. I grew up in South Texas, and I remember in the late 90s, which would have been around the 1998 event there in Quebec, we were seeing the Aurora Borealis down to South Texas. Because I remember my folks were sheriff's deputies, and, you know, they're talking about how they were getting 911 calls. People thought aliens were in their area. There was some kind of weird fire because the sky was doing weird things. Well, that was a direct result of solar weather. And 1821, again, we're talking primitive technology here. The New York Central Railroad had to halt its operations because of the signal and switch failures. And then it created a fire in a control tower, all because of a solar weather event that created a man-made or a geomagnetic disturbance, or you know, a solar flare, if you want to call it that, for lack of better terms. But again, in March 25th, 1940, another solar storm created extremely high voltage spikes, where, again, telegraph and telephone lines were designed to carry around 48 volts around that time. They measured spikes in upwards of 600 volts in the telephone and telegraph lines.
Wow. I'm surprised they didn't burn up.
Well, and a lot of them did, and power generating stations in New York reported voltage fluctuations of nearly 1,200 volts. And you may think, okay, well, that's really not a lot. But you got to remember, we in the United States run on alternating current. When these geomagnetic storms hit, and they hit our long line systems, anything that's metal and long in length is going to be directly affected by any type of solar storm event, any type of EMP from a solar storm. And it's all direct current. So our systems are not designed to have direct current running down it. Basically, take something that you would plug in, you know, take your USB adapter, and if you cut the wires and stuck it directly into your 110 outlet on the wall, your phone is not going to fare well.
Yeah.
Neither is your house circuitry either.
Yeah.
But that's about really the equivalent of you. You're taking alternating current and then shoving a direct current down there. It's going to override systems. Systems are not designed for it. And that's when you're going to start having your failures.
Yeah. The threat to our power grid, why is it such a vulnerable piece of our critical infrastructure? When the government knows it, industry knows it, what's the deal here? Why is it not getting taken care of?
You know, I almost think it's like we talked about earlier. It's that stick your head in the sand and pretend you don't have a problem. You know, we know researchers have known that probably about 20% of the 345 kilovolt transformers, 28% of the 500 kilovolt transformers, and 32% of the 760 kilovolt transformers could damage or fail if we had another Carrington event.
Mm.
Nearly 350 high voltage transformers potentially could fail nationwide in a matter of hours. And as we've seen from other events that have triggered catastrophic power failures, they're normally either like a weather related, we've talked before about a tree limb brushing the line.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, caused a trip in the system. There was some poor maintenance. It didn't do what it was supposed to. Well, that caused the other relay station. And it's like dominoes. Once they start falling, they're going to keep going until you run out of dominoes.
Mm.
But it's going to happen in a matter of seconds to minutes.
That's fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why I said, we won't even know what hit us, or at least most of us won't. And why, you know, I really can't explain why. That has been, I think, the question that everyone has been asking. We know it's a problem. We know that the ramifications are huge. Life-threatening. Literally life-threatening. And why no one is really doing anything about it, say for a couple of cities here and there that are finally saw the light, no pun intended, that they're like, hey, we need to fix the system, especially with critical infrastructure. But for the rest of the United States and for the rest of our critical infrastructure, I think there's this mentality of, well, it'll never happen. The odds are so remote. You know, the technology is so advanced, it will never happen. That's just something you see on Hollywood.
You're a risk manager. You're not necessarily in the emergency management field, but a lot of emergency managers, they don't really take this threat seriously. At least that's my indication from a couple boards that I follow. And whenever I post something, I'm always getting hammered by people. You know, why are you messing around? You know, you're too worried about an EMP. You know, it's like, well, you know, I've always been taught you take the worst case scenario and you backward plan from that. And so that's my mentality, and that's why I worry about it, because it's the worst thing. It's like, if you live on the coast, what's the number one boogeyman that you're going to worry about? A hurricane. And so you're going to try and prepare for that hurricane. At least you should be. So that's just something that my military and law enforcement and intelligence background has taught me to do. But, you know, one of the things that I do see, whether it's a natural man-made disaster that's of a large scale, like Katrina or Sandy or Michael or Harvey, you know, even Maria in Puerto Rico, is loss of civility. People, there are people out there that take advantage of others in any situation that they have an opportunity to. Can you give us your thoughts on that?
No, I'm right there with you on that. You know, you look at all the major hurricanes, tornadoes, anywhere where people had to either evacuate beforehand or immediately after the disaster. And, you know, they got to call in law enforcement, sometimes the National Guard, because of those people that are doing the rioting and the looting. And I've mentioned before in the last segment that when you have this type of situation, most of your population has been removed. This allows a little bit better handling as far as bringing your resources in to control the civil unrest and all the civil disobedience that's going on. But we've never taken account of what happens when nobody leaves, when everybody is there.
Yeah.
And we, unfortunately, are a creature of habit. We also sometimes are going to look to the person next to us to see what they're going to do. Well, if they start panicking and start rioting and, you know, criminal activity, looting, another group's going to see that. So, well, if they're doing it, we can do that, or we should be doing that. You know, it's a free-for-all now. And we've never even really looked at that and to see how that's going to play out. Again, I had the advantage of having some emergency management background when I worked for the railroad. And now with the risk management, I like to kind of put this in the context where emergency management, kind of as the name applies, you're preparing to manage a particular emergency. That means getting resources there, bringing in FEMA, bringing in supplemental law enforcement, firefighters, electrical workers, whatever you need to do to get that community up and running again. And there is a small preventative part of that. But really on the risk management side, that's where you look at things, and that's where you look at what is going to be the thing that can shut us down permanently. And like I said, let's work backwards and let's look at those risks. How are we going to manage them to make sure that we can keep going? I know you know a lot about continuity of operation.
Yes.
I always like to say continuity of operations is kind of like the rubber glue that holds emergency management and risk management together. Because to have a good continuity plan, you have to have a good risk management plan and a good emergency management plan. But without all three of those, it's going to collapse. And I don't think we have ever looked at what will happen at a long-term power loss. Now, at this point in time, I don't know what would happen if we were hacked and we lost all internet or cellular data. We could have electricity, but because we're still dependent on the Internet of Things, what happens if our cell towers go down, our fiber optics networks get hacked, they get, you know, shut down? What happens then? Again, we're just as dependent on that as we are with electricity. I don't think we have one without the other.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I hadn't thought about the communication system being dropped, you know, by cyber, but it's definitely a huge target. You know, whatever our adversaries can get at, they're going to take advantage of. You know, one of the things that I found when I started looking into what was available to the average citizen, because there was a time when I had a golden ticket to a secret location up in the Virginia mountains, would have been golden there, you know, but everybody else would have been left high and dry, including my wife, which she reminded me of when I told her about what I got. And I go, oh, crap, I didn't think about that. What I started doing is I looked at all these different emergencies like Katrina, because that was a big deal, and people were rushed in there. We had, I was with ICE at the time, we had people going in there, our response team went in there, and then they started calling for other volunteers. And so we had a lot of people there, you know, and then follow on with other disasters that, that happened around, like in Joplin, Missouri, with the tornado up there and stuff. One of the things that I noticed was continuity of government's fine. Continuity of business is taken care of. You know, there's a lot of focus on that. But where's the continuity of community? There is none. That's the third leg of the stool that has to be taken into consideration. You have to have the community involvement in order for a community to be resilient. Otherwise, it's government, top-down government approach. There's no citizenry involved, and that's wrong. It's just wrong. It needs to be fixed. That's why I started this concept of civil defense all over again, because I see the continuity of community, which is resiliency, which is civil defense, as the same thing. It has to be part of a community's program, because there's not enough fire, there's not enough police, there's not enough EMS to take care of things in a real big disaster. Hurricane Harvey in Houston is a huge example of the people coming and going to the rescue of their neighbors and fellow Houstonians. That is the spirit of civil defense right there. And that is what is missing in every community in this country. We need to have it. We had it one time. We need to bring it back. And I'll get off my high horse. But it's something that I believe we have to bring back.
I agree with you 100%, and I got to be careful not to get wound up either, because that is a very sensitive subject with me. You know, with social media, we have lost that interpersonal communication. Everything we can do now, we can communicate with everybody from grade school all the way to present, all at one time by a push of a button. It's like there's no more need for face-to-face socialization. And I think that has trickled down into the nonprofit organizations such as CERT, you know, the Citizen Emergency Response Team. I see it, you know, as a scout leader, I see the lack of parental involvement, lack of kids wanting to interact with other kids. You know, growing up as a kid, and we still went to the county fair because that was where we got to catch up on everything. My parents got to catch up with the other parents. We got to see friends that we may not have seen from other cities. We got together. We had a good time. We socialized. About 8 years ago, I went back to my county fair, and at one time, it used to bring in thousands upon thousands of people. The last time I went, there was 300 people.
Oh, wow.
And they couldn't figure out why, and I know why. It's people don't want to socialize. People are learning how not to personally socialize. It's all done through a screen. And when you don't even know your neighbors, now I'm fortunate enough to live in a subdivision where I know all my neighbors about five houses either direction at the minimum.
Yeah.
If someone new moves in, guess what? We go knock on the door and introduce ourselves.
Yeah.
Because when we need something, we know who we can rely on and talk to if we need something.
Yeah.
And that's gone. And again, you're going to get me on my soapbox here talking about civil defense and stuff, because I'm 100% with you on that. We need to come together as a society, as Americans, and realize that we are not immune to the things you see happening overseas.
Oh, yeah.
To think that we will never be attacked, whether it's a physical attack from another nation, whether it's a physical attack from an internal terrorist group or an EMP attack or anything like that. It's inevitable. It's coming. And I think we are so ill-prepared for it that it's going to be 10 times as devastating as if we were, you know, prepared and ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And cyber is happening every day. Every day, power companies are shielding off, you know, resisting and kicking out thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of attempts every day, every day, every day, day in, day out. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of attempts to break in. That's just the power industry. What about our banking and other industries? I mean, it's terrible. That's another threat that we didn't have a chance to really talk about, and we're running out of time.
Yeah, I get on the cyber sub-box too, you know, and I know we're short on time here, but not only the critical infrastructure, but the military infrastructure. We would be ignorant not to think that our adversaries are not trying to hack our satellite systems or weapons defense systems.
Oh, yeah.
It's happening.
All the time. You know, we don't hear about those because of the sensitive nature of that. But you know they're being hit all the time. Matter of fact, the Office of Personnel Management got hacked, and all my data got absorbed by the Chinese who hacked them. And so, you know, all my stuff's out there on the dark web somewhere. But I want to go down this list here real quick of what I see as threats, and you can tell me what you think. I have these in semi-cascading order here. I have EMP, then I have CME, solar flare, then I have cyber attack, then I have other electromagnetic spectrum weapons, which there are many that we haven't even begun to talk about. Then there's physical attack and even combined attacks using all the above that, you know, man-made that can be used to attack our infrastructure. What do you think there?
You know, about the only thing I would switch on that list was I would still probably put the CME, the Coronal Mass Ejection Space Weather Event, slightly, and I mean slightly above the man-made EMP, only because we know that there's roughly a 10% chance every decade, every 10 years, of us being hit by a sizable space weather event. And that's going to be, you know, the odds are always going to be against us on that. That's the only reason why I would just nudge that a little bit higher over an EMP. But, you know, and you talk about this list, and I think you probably on the agreement with me when I say that if there was a gap, you know, a space between each one of those items, they would be very, very slim.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Because they are all equally important. They're all vulnerabilities that we have to watch out for. And you're right, it could be a series of attacks. You know, what happens when you launch a cyber attack that takes down your radar defense systems, missile defense systems, just because you cut the power to it, and EMP gets launched, detonated over a particular area? Now your systems are even more vulnerable, and, you know, Russia isn't, I mean, yeah, they're flexing their muscles, you know, flying bombers, you know, right along our international airspace there, but, you know, they're doing that for a reason. They're not just doing it for fun and games. I mean, they're trying to intimidate us. They're going back to Cold War tactics, but there's a reason for it. And people forget that the shortest route to get to the United States from Russia or Europe is to fly over the poles.
Yep.
And to me, that's concerning too.
Well, I was in the Air National Guard for a while. Our alert birds used to take off after Russians all the time. I mean, a couple times a month, we would have a scramble and they'd be off and escorting the bombers outside of our territory. So I know about their probing and their continuous probing all the time. They're always doing something. That's nothing new. Their boldness on the high seas of, you know, almost ramming our ships, that's something new. But I wouldn't say that they're probing our airspace is new. It's a dangerous world. It really is. For those who think that because we are America, we are vulnerable, we've been hit before. We don't want another Pearl Harbor. We don't want another 9/11. And those things were during times when we thought that we were untouchable. You know, we're back to that mentality right now. We're untouchable. We don't have to worry about anybody. Well, I think we do. There's too many threats out there, and they're very real. As a matter of fact, the Iranians, they are being bolder and bolder right now. And I know in my military mind that we have people here with the mission of disrupting this country should we go to some kind of conflict with Iran.
Oh, that I agree with wholeheartedly as well. And the other thing is, we are such at a pivotal point, I think, in our nation's history that because of all this technological threats that we're being faced with right now, to include now the deep fakes, the artificial intelligence, the cyber attacks, we already know about the, you know, Russian getting in and doing the influencing on social media, and not just Russians, I mean our own internal groups. You know, we got a major election be coming up, you know, presidential election coming up. We've seen kind of in the past how people react, and especially when they see Facebook. This is going to be a very interesting time in the next 2 to 3 years to see what happens as we move forward in America and see how these new technological threats are going to play out. You know, unfortunately, I think we're going to see some after effects of it, and not in a positive light either.
Yeah. Well, just moving forward to the next election, I see a lot of civil unrest, a lot of civil unrest. It's going to be taken to another notch above what we saw last time. I think last time will be child's play compared to what we have ahead of us. If Portland, Oregon, my home, my boyhood home, is any indication, it's going to be bad.
Yeah. Portland, Seattle, L.A., unfortunately, Austin, I think, is starting to migrate that way when it comes to Antifa, you know, UT campus.
Yep.
Has some issues with them. We're starting to see that problem with the homelessness in Austin. You know, we're kind of setting ourselves up for that perfect storm.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Well, Matt, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for coming back to discuss your thesis, and I hope our listeners get on the show notes and click on the link that we'll provide to your thesis and download it and read it for themselves, because it is really an interesting and well-documented and information-packed thesis.
Well, again, thank you very much, Preston. As always, it's a joy to be on your show, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Yes, I hope so. Well, everybody, thanks for being on the show today. I want to say the top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem of resiliency. We are looking for volunteers throughout the nation to pick up the mantle of civil defense for their communities. Let's start a conversation with a guide found on the resources page of our website at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_DEF_radio, where we post things on a regular basis. These are threats that we see. There are various types of threats. So our threats page on the website is a lot of information for you. I wish to thank our guests again, Matthew, and to thank you, our listeners. I really appreciate you guys being on the show this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.